getting close to that time. The clock says 10 seconds till 9 o'clock back there. I'm going to crank up here because I got a little extra on the front end I want to talk about this morning. There we go. It's me. Hey, Jeremy. Put the TV on back here, please. Let's see. We talked about the 17 periods, we call it, the periods of Bible history several times, kind of reviewed through them a few times. This morning I'm going to do a little different twist to them. I want you to start thinking about something extra as we go through here. We'll just do the first part of them a little bit this morning. And if you know the books of the Bible, Old Testament, they're going to be, it's going to make it easier for you. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, like that. So let's think about this morning as we look at these periods. Everybody knows these, before the flood, the scattering of the people, patriarchs, Exodus, and the first one's there. Let's look at putting some scriptures with those. So where is the before the flood found? Well, it's in Genesis 1 through 5. And this is a very rarity on the front end because the first four periods, excuse me, are all covered in Genesis. So you got four periods in one book. Now that's very strange because the rest of the way it's going to be multiple books per period. Here we got four periods in one book. So before the flood is the first five chapters of Genesis. So the flood's going to be the next five chapters. We got five and then five. So Genesis 6 through 10 is where the flood's found. And then we got the oddity, this little period we call the scattering of the people. It's in Genesis chapter 11. It's one chapter. And then the patriarchs finishes up the rest of the book of Genesis, 12 through 50. So we got four periods covered in the book of Genesis. First five chapters, before the flood. Next five chapters, 6 through 10. Talking about the flood. Scattered the people, Tower of Babel, so chapter 11. And then patriarchs, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. And then the story of Joseph getting into the Exodus is in 12 through 50. Then Genesis, the next book is Exodus. So Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, the first part of Numbers. Chapters 1 through 13 are involved with the Exodus. So now everything's nice in order. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers. So if we go to the next periods then, wandering in the wilderness, nation of conquest, judges, United Kingdom, where we are now, let's figure out how they go. So we got the rest of the book of Numbers, 14 through 36. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, and starting off in Joshua, first five chapters of Joshua. Or the wandering in the wilderness. What was Joshua's main purpose? Joshua himself was to lead the people in and conquer the land. So the rest of the book of Joshua covers the invasion and conquest. Everything's in nice logical order so far. Then we get to Judges. And boy, that was easy to start off with there. Get the book of Judges, Ruth, and just a little bit into 1 Samuel. Because in 1 Samuel chapter 8, the people did what? They wanted a king, right? That's where we started off this quarter. Our study here for the United Kingdom. So everything's in order up there. So then the United Kingdom comes in, and we have the rest of the book of 1 Samuel, 2 Samuel, and the first part of 1 Kings. So everything there is in nice logical chronological order with the name of the way the books are in the Old Testament. Now, one little twist to it now that gets a little complicated. This is where the hard part starts. There's a parallel story of the United Kingdom given in the book of 1 and 2 Chronicles. So it doesn't take the place of 1 Samuel, 2 Samuel, and 1 Kings, but it's a parallel to it. So we call it the B chapter, the B plan, if you will, going through there. So we get 1 Chronicles 10 through 2 Chronicles chapter 9. It's also involved in the United Kingdom. So we'll go through these again several times. I just want to introduce it. A lot of you know this already, but it's a good thing to know before you go find where these things are. So let's break ours down now. This quarter will be in United Kingdom, the first half. Next quarter, the second half of it. We'll go up to about the story of David and Bathsheba this quarter. So Saul, which we're looking at now, is in 1 Samuel. We actually started in chapter 8 for this quarter. Saul's private anointing is in chapter 9. So he actually becomes king publicly in chapter 10. So we'll say 1 Samuel 10 through the rest of 1 Samuel. period covered by Saul. David is essentially the book of 2 Samuel. Make that pretty simple. And then Solomon, which we'll get to in the next quarter, is the 1 Kings, first part, first 11 chapters. Now, remember there's a parallel part to it. So, Saul is in 1 Chronicles chapter 10. There's that one chapter talks about Saul. David picks up there and goes 1 Chronicles 11 through 29. And then Solomon is 2 Chronicles, first 9 chapters. So that's how this United Kingdom part breaks out. And we'll do some more with the rest of it later on, and I'll put this back up. When tonight, we're going through it again right quick. At the beginning, if we get through early today, we'll hit it again or something. So, all right, let's get into this morning stuff. There we go. This morning we're in 1 Samuel 23, the last half of chapter 23 and all of chapter 24. So turn to 1 Samuel 23, if you will, so we can crank it up today. 1 Samuel 23, starting in verse 15, and then we've got all of chapter 24 this morning. All right, let's get a map, a little different map than one we've been using. I did this one. It puts the whole territory in there, so you kind of get used to now the whole area of Palestine. We're looking at here, land of Canaan. We've been centered in on this part down to south for now. Here's Gibeah, Saul's hometown, Jerusalem, Sidon Nob, where we talk about the priest, without the Elon Valley to Gath over here where David was. With the Philistines. Here's Adullam, Keilah, that we had last time in our story with the cave of Adullam. They went up and rescued the people of Keilah from the attack of the Philistines. So that was here. Today we're going to be looking at these areas down in here. Here is En Gedi, right over on the coast of the Dead Sea. The spring there, we'll get to that a little later on. There's also Maon, M-A-O-N, will be in there, almost this area down there. So we're down in this wilderness, all this wilderness area down in here. And so here's a little better map of that area down there. We're going to start off today in Horash. All right, here's Adullam, we were last time. Here's Keilah. Here's Jerusalem way up here. Down this mountain ridge here, Bethlehem, Hebron. We're in Horash. We'll also get into the minister of Maon. And then Gedi is over here on the coast. So notice the terrain here. This mountain ridge down through here, dropping off from, better than 2,000 feet high here down to 1,300 feet below sea level. So really going almost straight down. You get over through here. Okay. All right. Ready to read verses, 13 and 14 of chapter 23, if you would there. This is the last two verses I hope we had last time. And that'll kind of get us running start into our study today. Okay.
David and his men were about to approach the road and departed out of the north. And went through the square where they could go. And it was told Saul that David had escaped from Keilah. He forbore to go forth. And David abode in the wilderness and stronghold and remained.
Okay, Saul's obsession. We're going to see more and more of it as we go through the next several chapters here. Of killing David. He's got to get rid of David. That's his thrust here. So, if you left Keilah, they got out of there and they scattered out and went out, and now Saul is trying to find him to get to him. So, David now is Horash, down in the wilderness of Ziph, that's that rugged, mountainous country. We'll see some pictures of it here in a minute. And Saul's looking for him. But Jonathan comes down to see him, Saul's son, that we've talked about having a very, very close relationship with David. He comes down and finds David, and he strengthens him, encourages him. And what does Jonathan tell him about the kingship? But it's going to be you, and I'll be right there by your side. Jonathan knows he's not going to be king. And so even though he knows that fact, he still, we'll talk about this later, there's no jealousy, there's no animosity on his part toward David. They're very, very close friends. He said, you'll be king, I'll be right there by your side. Doesn't turn out quite that way, but that's what Jonathan wants here. Again, they renew their covenant they have with each other, and then Jonathan leaves, and David stays there in the wilderness and is hiding, if you will. Okay? Freddie mentioned that. And Jonathan also points out, Freddie said, that Jonathan said, and my father knows that you're going to be king too. Now, there's been no public proclamation of David being king. He was anointed by Samuel in Bethlehem, but nothing public about it yet. And so, but Jonathan does point out that David knows that too there as well. So, the people down there, Jonathan's gone back home. The people around Ziph down there then, still loyal to their king, until they go tell Saul that David is down here in our territory. Okay? We know where he is. You may come when you're ready, and we'll deliver him into your hands. We'll tell you where he is. We'll help you find him. We know where he is down in that area down there. So, Saul, what did Saul tell them? Blessings from who? From the Lord. Mike in his slides here said, not. Yeah. What was blessing the Lord about what Saul said to the Ziphites here? Nothing. That was Saul saying, okay. You're blessed by the Lord for coming to tell me this. No, don't think so. So he tells him, said, you go back and you find out. And I kind of like, I've been looking at the English Standard Version, I'm not sure what the others say, but I kind of look like what it says. He said, you go back, find out where his foot is. But you go find out exactly where he is. Because I've been told he's very, very crafty. Talking about David. So you go back and find out exactly where he is. And then I'll come down and you can hand him over to me. So they leave and go back. As if I still go back and find exactly where David is hiding in that wilderness down there. So they've moved around some. They're now in this area down around Maon, which shows you on the map a minute ago. And Saul and his men come down and they start looking for him. And David's told about it. Word gets to David about it there. And so David goes to a rock in the desert there. And we get, not strange, you have a rock here named this, a rock here named that. You see some of the terrains in the pictures in a minute. And all it is rocks. So that's all it is in that desert area down there. So we'll look at some pictures in a minute and see that. But when David's there in the wilderness of Maon, hiding from Saul, Saul's coming to look for him. That's when he stops. And I said before, I don't know if he actually writes Psalms 54, these Psalms in these places, or if he thinks back on later in his life, what was going on in his life, and writes them there. But let's read Psalms 54, because it fits right in here with David as he's hiding in the wilderness, and Saul's coming to look for him. Rob, you got Psalms 54? I'll read it.
Save me, O God, by your name, and vindicate me. Behold, God is my helper. The Lord is with those who uphold my life. He will repay my enemies for their evil. Cut them off. Your truth. I will freely sacrifice to you. I will praise your name, O Lord, for it is good. For he has delivered me out of all trouble, and my eye has seen his desire among my enemies.
Okay, not unlike, not unlike some of the other Psalms we've seen in this same time frame here with David. What's he basically doing in the first half, the first three verses here? What you talking about? They're coming after him. They're looking for him. His enemies are looking for him. And it kind of lays out the picture, if you will, there. But then starting in verse 4, who's he turned to? Turns to God. And we've seen that same thing in other Psalms we've had written in the same time frame, okay? That David kind of lays out the picture in the first part of the Psalm, and then he turns and puts all his strength, all his focus on God as he looks at that, and as he gets into the latter part of the Psalm. He does that same thing here in Psalms 54, as he's writing about his distress as Saul is looking for him, but then he talks about, where's my strength? Who's going to deliver me? Well, God is. That's where David's faith stays, his focus all this time. Okay, Saul's come down. People of Ziph have told Saul where he is. So Saul comes down looking for David, and it says Saul and his army with him is going down one side of the mountain, and David's men are on the other side of the mountain. And again, I'll show you some pictures in a minute, but you got to picture this. You got that mountain range down through the central part of the country we talked about. But as it drops off down to the Dead Sea, and of course, off to the side, it's not just a smooth, nice little drop-off down through there. There's gullies and valleys and mountainous areas down through there. So it's not beautiful at all as they're going to this rugged mountain country that a mountaintop could divide the two armies over there. That's what's happening here. Saul's on one side, David's on the other side. And David's hurrying to get away. But then the search stops. What happens? Yeah, Saul gets a message that says, the Philistines are attacking. The Philistines are attacking our nation, the Israelite nation up there. So as much as Saul would like to get David, that's a very personal vengeance type thing. What's his responsibility overall? Well, it's to the nation of Israel. He's the king, right? So this message comes about the Philistines attacking. He's got to leave his little private battle with David, if you will, here. And he has to go see about that. So they say, come quickly. The Philistines are raiding the land. So Saul quits that, leaves David there, and then he goes back to take care of the Philistines. We'll see him a little bit later. He leaves then, and David goes over to this place called Engedi. I showed you on the map earlier. It's over right on the edge of the Dead Sea down there. Now, think about the Dead Sea. It is the Dead Sea, right? Arid, nothing there, death, the word itself there. Well, this Engedi is a spring. It's a big, lush spring. As this water comes out of these mountains here and down to the spring. So, a picture here. My clicker's not clicking. This is a picture of the spring of Engedi. If you look, whoops, back up one. If you look, here's the Dead Sea area. You're way across the Dead Sea, the Transjordan, the big mountains over there. And you see some of this rugged land that's all around. This is just the oasis here because of the springs. We got a little short video, no sound with it. All the sound was just the music, so I'm going to turn it down. Well, let's play about 3 minutes of it. It's going to show you the area around this, that David's in down here, around this Engedi. It's going to show you the lush waters that are coming up here. So, click that. Jimmy, if you play that. Okay, get some idea of the terrain around here. The deer on the cliffs, these rocks up here walking around. And that's what this whole mountainous desert wilderness area down here is like. And of course, the spring there with all the lush waters would be a welcome thing to people here. Actually, it's going to be up in a minute to 600. We're going to read here in a few minutes. Yeah, and Saul brings 3,000 with him this time. So waters, we talked about feeding them last time. The water's just a precious thing in this wilderness area out here. So, yeah. Okay, we're down to chapter 24, and we'll get the first time when David actually spares Saul's life. We'll get into it here. So Saul has come back now from his battle with the Philistines, from stopping that insurgence there, if you will. And he's told now that David's at Engedi, the spring area we just looked at here. And so he takes 3,000 men with him. And he goes to try to find David. This passion he's got here, he's got to get rid of David. So he goes to this place, they call it the Crag of the Wild Oats, the Crag of the Rock. And you can see why from the terrain it would be pretty be called that. So there's caves all in these mountains down through here. And Saul goes into one of these caves, to go to the bathroom, to relieve himself. He did not know that back in that part of this same cave, obviously he would have chosen a different one. He didn't know that David and his men are back in the back part of this cave. So I'm sure it'd be a nice cool place and in this wilderness dry area down here to hide out and rest. So what did David's men see this as? Saul's come in here. We're in here. This is it, man. Okay. Go get it. And look what they say. What has the Lord done? The Lord's given Saul into your hands. They look at this as a providence type thing from God, if you will. Look, David, this is me talking to him. God has given Saul into your hands. All you got to do is go up there and kill him, and this is over with. David wouldn't do that. David wouldn't do that. He doesn't go up there and secretly or secretly cuts off a piece of Saul's robe. So Saul laid his robe aside while he was using the bathroom there. Well, I don't know, he gets this piece of corduroy robe cuts off. And even cutting off a quarter of Saul's robe bothered David. We're going to talk about why. I think it's really, really important here to make a point about this. So David tells his men, no, can't do this. The Lord forbid that I should do such a thing to whom? To the Lord's anointed. He uses that phrase more than once here. To the Lord's anointed. So he rebukes his men for wanting to do that. Did not allow them to attack Saul. And Saul leaves and goes on his way. But look at this phrase here. Saul was the Lord's anointed. He was the anointed king, chosen by God to be the king of Israel. Now, he's been rejected by God. But at this point in time, he is still the king of Israel. And David recognizes that. Keep that point in mind a minute. We're going to tie it together something else in a minute. So David spares his life. So he pieces his robe off. Saul, you got to know I was pretty close if I can do that. So he leaves. Saul does, leaves the cave, goes back out, and David comes out behind him. What does David do? Calls out to him and says, my lord the king, and then does what? Bows down to the ground, okay? Bows down to the ground before the king. Keep that point in mind for a minute, okay? What's the lesson? I don't have this in the application at the end, but to me there's a strong lesson here. David would not hurt the Lord's anointed. And when he appeared before him, he bowed himself to the ground. What's the lesson? He had respect for the Lord's anointed. How does that apply to us? respect our leaders. Mike says respect the position of authority God has ordained. Okay. And as bad as we think things are in this country right now, and they are bad, and probably going to get worse, still, where did our leadership come from? Okay. God's allowed that, the leaders we have, to be in place. We have an obligation to show the proper respect to them. I think that lesson just jumps out of this right here. Jumps out. Was Saul a good guy? Saul was sorry. He disobeyed God over and over. God has rejected him from being his leader. But he's still the king. David recognized that. They would not kill him. They would not harm him because of that. He even bowed himself down to the ground as you would to a king. Okay. All right, let's go back. I went too far here. 9 through 15 is what David said to Saul as he came out of the cave, called to him, and then bowed before him, that here's what he said to him. Who's got that? Albert, read it for us. 9 through 15. And listen to word David's words as he talks to Saul about, why are you after me? Why are you doing this to me? Okay. What's David saying to Saul? He's kind of said the same thing before to him. Saul, why are you after me? What have I done? What have I done to you? Look, the Lord delivered you into my hands. I could have killed you. I didn't. I have a piece of your robe here. It shows how close I got to you. But I spared you because that's not what I should be doing. It's killing the Lord's anointed. And then he goes this thing and says, wickedness brings on wickedness. If I was wicked, if I was really wanting to kill you, what would I have done? I would have killed you, okay? So what are you kind of looking for? What am I that you keep searching for me and trying to come after and kill me? And then how Saul react? That you, my son David? Look at Saul's reaction. Recognizing that David is more righteous than he is. What is Saul trying to do? He's trying to kill David, and he has really no reason to do it except his own grudge and his own guilt himself. Okay? He knows that. He knows that. And he says, David, you've done good. You didn't kill me. You made the right choice. I didn't. This hunting you and trying to kill you is wrong. The Lord delivered you. David wouldn't kill you. And here's where he says again, I know that you're going to be king. So I'll recognize that. As we said earlier, that Jonathan pointed that out. And Saul asked David then to do the same thing that Jonathan's already asked David to do. That is, when you're king, look after my household and my family and my descendants as he goes into the future down through there. David gives Saul an oath that he will do that. And he leaves, goes home, and David returns back to the stronghold. You say, well, if David believed it, why didn't David go home too? It won't take us long to find out the answer to that. And they say, stay tuned. Wait until next week. Okay. We'll find out exactly why David didn't go home. Like Saul said this. All right, now this brings on Psalms 57, which is written now at the time when he's there at the cave of Saul. So let's read Psalms 57 and see how it ties into this same thing here. I know you've got a good loud voice, but reading Psalms 57 for us. Okay, look at verse 1 there again. The shadow of your wings have my refuge. These calamities have passed by. David recognizes what's going on. Verse 6, my soul is bowed down. They've dug a pit before me. In the midst of themselves, how they've fallen. And then verse 7, he turns it around again. God, my heart is steadfast. We'll sing, give praises. Awake my glory. And then you get the phrase there, I will awaken the dawn. The phrase, song we have there. And he talks that it reaches to God again then. In this psalm here. And this distress is all around him. Okay. Comments. Thing to talk about from these, this chapter and a half we've had here this morning, the narrative through it. Great point. All right. If you didn't hear Albert, what he's talking about with back to the thing here with what's going on in the country, our country here now, and going back to Saul when he told his guards to kill the priest back at Nob. Remember that? And when he brought the priest of Nob up to talk to them. And they wouldn't do that. They knew it was wrong. Okay. David here, wickedness begets wickedness. David would not participate in the wickedness, even though Saul was led right in his hands there. Saul is still the Lord's anointed. He's still the king. And David would not participate in that. And then the lesson he's making point is for us, Albert's saying, is that the wickedness all around us, in this world now, it's our choice. We get involved in it with our Facebook posts, our comments, what we say to our friends, our attitudes, or to stay away from it. Conduct ourselves like we ought to. Okay, a couple points on the screen up here I'll run through. We've got a couple of minutes left. We'll hit them right quick, let you think about them. The verse says, be unselfish with your dealings with others. It makes 2 points here. Jonathan, what's Jonathan's attitude toward David? David is going to be king. Jonathan knows that. What's Jonathan's attitude toward David? They're trying to kill him so he'll be the king? Absolutely not, okay? Totally unselfish attitude toward David. They turned around the other way, and what's standing between David and the throne? And they said the eyes of the succession thing here. It'd be Jonathan, right? Jonathan's what's between him and the throne. Because he's the king, the king's son. He would be king next. Does that bother David? No. The attitude between the two here is just something to be admired. Knowing the circumstance of each. The passage up here, Abraham let Lot choose. Joseph, the way he treated his brothers. The chapter 50 here is after the death of their father. Their brothers were really worried about how Joseph would come back and treat them or what he had done to them. Joseph didn't do that. No revenge there. And then the ones from the New Testament there. And then there's a slide here about the providence of God. And I'll tell you up front, I don't understand all about that. I don't know how it all works. So did some of these things that happened in this study we had today, was providence of God involved when they came down and told Saul about the Philistines attacking to put him away from hunting David, bringing Saul into the cave where David was? Was that providence of God doing that so this lesson could be applied? I don't know. I don't understand all about providence. I do know that Ecclesiastes 9, things happen. I do all know also that God's in control of the forces of nature. And he uses them. So I just leave that with you. Think about some. I don't know the answer to that. Somebody's got some strong comments about that. We'll talk about it, but I don't. Sure. But and that's the point. We don't know when God's acting in a way that's going to cause things to line up and happen, or when it was not. And then this strong, strong lesson here that we need to get, we talked about this already, is overcoming evil with good. Lessons for us in these New Testament passages here. Be not overcome with evil, but overcome evil with what? With good. Okay, and that's exactly what David did. David had a chance to be overcome with evil. Saul was there, he could put an end to all this stuff. He didn't. He overcame his evil with good. Big, big, big lesson for us out there to be thinking about. Don't get caught up in evil around us. Okay. Okay. Wednesday night, lesson 10, chapter 25, 26, and 27, along with Psalm 63. Read that ahead of time. 25, 26, and 27. Psalm 63. Okay. Thank you very much.